In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Piss excellence.
Welcome back to another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Mo.
And this is Dallin. Mitch, it's good to be here with you, buddy.
Woo! It's great. First episode of 2021. Good riddance, 2020. Get out of here. New year, new you, right, D? New year, new you.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, isn't that the routine? Though I gave up on setting goals a long time ago, Mitch.
Oh, did you?
Because, like, who needs self-improvement?
Well,
you know,
we all
overrated.
Do. Ah, we all do. I know someone who needs to improve on their football picks, but we'll get to that a little bit later.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll Mitch is feeling later. Good. We'll talk about this later, but for the
first time
in the 3 years that we've been doing this, Mitch has won the picks. Or is, I guess 2 years. Have we been doing this only 2 years?
I think only 2 years. Yeah.
Has it only been 2 years? Well, Mitch won the NFL picks, our quick picks, so we'll kind of reveal what consequence I get from this moving forward. But hey, congrats, buddy. I know, you know, I win pretty much everything, so I guess, you know, you gotta get one every
once in a while. Yeah, you win everything. Yeah, Lakers get a title, Dodgers get a title, all of a sudden you win everything. Okay.
Yeah, you know, 2020 wasn't actually that bad. I don't know why we talked.
It was pretty good to you. I mean, it was pretty good to you.
It was pretty great.
Back half, pretty good to you.
For my sports. Yeah, for my sports teams, it was excellent. But we'll see. You know, it is exciting. New Year's always exciting. And this is a great time of year, Mitch. It is our favorite time to do the podcast because we are in the beginning of the NFL playoffs and covering the NFL playoffs and then, you know, the Super Bowl, the lead into the NFL draft. All of this for the next couple months is like heaven for you and I. And we get to start right away with Wild Card Weekend. This time, 6 games, 3 games on Saturday, 3 games on Sunday with the expanded Wild Card to 7 teams. It is so much fun. And obviously we'll get into those this week, but this is the time of year you and I crave.
Oh, dude, it's Super Wild Card Weekend. It's the biggest Wild Card Weekend in the history of the NFL. We get 6 games. We get more football on this week than we ever have in NFL history. We're getting closer to the NFL draft. College football starting to wrap up. We got the national championship game, Alabama-Ohio State. If you didn't watch those games, those semifinal games last week, good for you because they wound up being kind of trash, to be honest with you. There was runaway winners. I mean, honestly, I mean, college football playoffs, fantastic and fun to watch, but they just weren't great games. But we're getting close to the NFL draft. NFL draft order has been set, so now we know who's starting to go where. Ton of quarterbacks available in this draft, so we're going to get all into that stuff. You're exactly right. This is the time of year where you and I really just, we crave this stuff because we get high pressure, high-intensity football, a lot at stake, and we have high-pressure, high-intensity stuff coming up for the future of next season. It's going to be all condensed in about 4 months. It's a good time of year.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And we're going to start this podcast off, Mitch, with just talking about the Week 17, and we're going to get to the playoff teams, the wild card weekend, and then obviously the teams that earn the bye, the one bye available in each conference. We'll get to all those later, but let's start with the teams that missed out, and there were some races, you know, some opportunities to be had. Let's start in the AFC. There were 4 spots available for 5 teams that all had at least 10 wins. And ultimately, one of them was going to be left out. In this case, Mitch, it was the Miami Dolphins who fell and fell hard to Buffalo. 56-26. That's the most points anybody, any one defense has given up in any game this season. The most goes in week 17 to the Dolphins, who had had one of the best defenses in the league, were a win away from a playoff spot, and then just got the doors knocked off by Buffalo. A very disappointing end to what was a very successful season for Miami, Mitch.
I mean, I don't want to take anything away from Miami. This team is headed in the right direction. This team is definitely headed in the right direction. I mean, they're just a piece of, I think they're just a couple pieces away, and I think some quarterback maturity away from being competitors with Buffalo. I mean, they're not that far away, and Brian Flores has done a fantastic job. 10-6 is nothing to hang your head about. This is a great season by Miami. Tua obviously showed his immaturity at the NFL level last week, or we're recording this on Tuesday, so just a couple days ago on Sunday. 35 for 58, 361, which is nothing to, it's a great total, but you know, the three picks, that's something that that needs to be worked on. And I think Tua definitely has the drive and the athleticism to work on that. For those of you that are saying that Tua wasn't the right pick that early in the draft, you're just an idiot. Tua is a good quarterback. He's got a high football IQ. This guy will be just fine. Really what this comes down to is that the Buffalo Bills are 13-3, their best record, I believe, since the early 90 Bills, where they were making those four Super Bowl runs. And Josh Allen right now is playing like Aaron Rodgers Jr. I mean, this guy is just lighting up, and he looks like he's just having fun. I mean, Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills will be a team that is going to be, this is going to be a team that is, I would not want to come up against. I don't want to come up against Buffalo, because this offense is so explosive. And the way that Josh Allen is playing, he just looks loose. He just looks like he has no worries in the world.
Confident.
He looks comfortable, confident. He has one of the best wide receivers in football to throw to, and he has a hell of a supporting cast to throw to. Not to mention, they just signed Kenny Stills for the playoffs. So Kenny Stills is going to be available to the Bills moving forward. This is a great passing attack. Obviously, we've been critical of the rushing attack. Antonio Williams stepped up for actually a pretty good showing, 12 for 63 and two touchdowns. This is a team I don't want to come up against. Still a very formidable defense, and Josh Allen playing loose and goose. Like I said, loosey-goosey. Like I said, he's playing like Aaron Rodgers Jr. right now.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Buffalo is really good, and we'll get to more Buffalo later as we talk about their playoff matchup. But for Miami here, I've heard a lot of criticism about Tua, especially it started over the last couple weeks, as that Miami kind of started to fade at the end here. And then obviously, as you mentioned, this week 17 performance doesn't help. But to give some context to this, for those who aren't aware, this is the stats for Tua this year. In 10 games played, not a full season for Tua, but he completed 64% of his passes, had 11 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, 3 rushing touchdowns, was sacked 20 times in 10 games. Not horrible, right? I mean, people are talking about Tua like he was Josh Rosen, right? And I don't get this sort of conversation, Mitch, because the Josh Rosen Arizona Cardinals that year won what, like two games? One game?
I think they were 3-13 that year.
Right. And meanwhile, Tua in 10 games, right, he took over, the team was 3-3. Okay? They went 7-3 over the 10 games that he played in for the last stretch of this season. Double-digit games, missed out on the playoffs because everybody else was just that good, and you had the worst matchup that anybody had in that final week. I mean, what, the Colts got to play Jacksonville, the Browns got, you know, full 100% backup Pittsburgh Steelers, and you had to face the Bills. Now, the Bills did have backups in for a lot of the second half, and those guys poured it on as well. No, you know, Miami, you got to win that game, but they, you know, it wasn't the easiest path for them. I still think this is a very successful season. You're absolutely right. Brian Flores is building a great team, and there's pieces around them. And also, you just drafted this kid with the 5th overall pick last season. They're not giving up on Tua yet. It would be the dumbest thing they could do would be to just punt on Tua Tagovailoa because they went 10-6 and still missed the playoffs. Like, if they make the playoffs this week, no one's talking about, oh, I think they should be looking for a new quarterback. But they go 10-6 and they lose out because of tiebreakers, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I don't know, man. Is he even the guy? It's crazy, Mitch.
Yeah, I think if they make the playoffs, the conversation becomes, who should they start, Tua or Ryan Fitzpatrick?
Sure.
And props to Ryan Fitzpatrick, by the way. Just, I mean, pretty much letting Tua take the reins and then being a good mentor to him. I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick is, I guess you could put him in one of the conversations of one of the better co-quarterbacks, backup quarterbacks that's ever been around, because he's been such a great mentorship to any quarterback that he's been around. This is an extremely smart guy. And for Tua to play with Ryan Fitzpatrick, I think that's a fantastic combination. And Tua's learned a lot from this. But you're exactly right. There's no reason to think that Tua is incapable of being a starting NFL quarterback right now, because of the statistics that he put up, because of his performance.
Importantly, they won football games. Yeah. Like, you know, it'd be one thing if he was putting up good stats and they were losing. But, like, he's been average at worst. And they've won games. So,
he's been below average at worst. I mean, he's had below
average maybe
games.
Below average, but he's still, he's also games, a rookie quarterback who had no regular offseason, who got put into a starting role halfway through the season, right? Like, that's not an ideal scenario. And yet, like, they still won games and they still had success with him, right? So,
no, I'm giving him credit for what he's done, but I mean,
no doubt.
You know, I don't think he's ready to set the world on fire by any means. He's got a lot of growth and a lot of maturity to do as an NFL quarterback, but he's going to be just fine. I think he's going to take a little time, but I think he's going to be just fine.
So. Sure. And the team around him could be much better. The offensive line could be much better. The weapons that he has to throw to could improve drastically. And that's what Miami will look to do in not only free agency, but in the NFL draft with two first round picks this year. And we'll talk about those.
And I mean, let me clarify. I don't think Tua is going to be a top 15 quarterback next year. I don't think that at all. I think it's going to take a couple years when I say it's going to take time.
Yeah, I mean, I think he could be successful next season, a top 15 guy. I don't see why he couldn't. I'm not saying he's going to be MVP, but
I wouldn't put money on it, but...
Sure. I mean, and who knows? Miami should be a good team next year. So if they're going to be good and win games, double-digit games again, then we'd have to presume that Tua improves upon what we saw this year and becomes a more, average... To slightly above average quarterback.
Get him another weapon. He'll be just fine.
Yes. And that early draft pick could definitely help with that. Mitch, let's talk about the other team that missed out. Well, there's a couple in the NFC, but I really don't want to talk about the NFC East like at all, if that's okay with you.
I don't
care about the 6-10 Giants getting butt hurt that they didn't get into the playoffs. Don't lose 10 games. And maybe you'll have a better shot at making the playoffs. But let's talk about the Arizona Cardinals, Mitch.
I think we should just, like, avoid the NFC East, except for the Redskins now. Or, damn it, I just did it again. The football team.
Yes, the football team.
Yeah, just we disregard the NFC East except for the football team. Washington.
100%.
And... because they're garbage. They're trash. So
they're garbage, and they don't deserve the time on here. But yes,
they're like Caillou. Caillou.
Wow.
They don't deserve attention, affection, or love.
Oh, wow, Mitch.
Yeah, Caillou sucks.
I mean, I don't know Caillou personally, but like, damn, that seems like kind of...
If you look him up on Google, that's what it says. So I'm going to look it up while you go
through this. All right, yeah. Okay, so NFC wild card. It came down to Chicago and Arizona. Chicago takes on the Green Bay Packers, loses to the Packers. The Arizona Cardinals take on the Los Angeles Rams. They lose to the Rams and lose out on an opportunity to make the playoffs. Kyler Murray goes out early in the game. Chris Streveler, I don't know how you say it, but he's from the Canadian Football League. He comes in, to try to do what he can. And despite the fact that John Wolford was the starting quarterback for the Los Angeles Rams, they still get the win. And Arizona misses out on the playoffs, Mitch. So let's talk about Arizona here in this context. We saw them going into this season as a team that could compete for that wild card spot. And especially with the seventh team, a team that we looked at as, yeah, that's a team that's going to benefit from that seventh spot, get a chance to get in at, you know, nine wins or so. It was right there for them in week 17. They came up short. It's an 8-8 season. How big of a disappointment is this? Is this a huge disappointment? Are there questions moving forward? Or is this still a step in the right direction for the Cardinals?
I mean, I think the way that they looked at the beginning of the year, based off that, this is a disappointment. Because They were definitely looking like someone that can compete for a wild card. I think Seattle was going to be tough to beat out for a division title. But this looked like a team that could definitely compete for a wild card spot. And the fact that they wound up at 8-8 is definitely disappointing. And I know a lot of people are calling for the firing of Cliff Kingsbury. I don't think it's quite time for that. I think that he could still use another year here to prove it. What he can do with Kyler Murray and in this air raid offense. I mean, they didn't even play Kyler Murray. They played Chris Streveler for most of the game.
Right. So, obviously, that's not ideal. And you would assume with the healthy Kyler Murray that they're able to get it done against John Wolford, right? And the Rams.
Yeah, John Wolford. I mean, come on.
But there is an argument about, like, should you have been in a better position anyways, considering that you're right, they were 6-3.
Yes,
and then finished the season 2-5, right? And so,
I mean,
you're
six
absolutely
and three
right.
Screams 10-6 at the end of the year.
Absolutely.
At
absolutely.
Least 10-6 at the end of the year. So, it is a disappointment. I don't think that, I think Arizona still is taking a step in the right direction. I am not bought in on Kenyon Drake. I think that they still need something in the backfield to help him out. And I think they need something.
A more reliable run game.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously the absence of Christian Kirk, I believe he's been out the majority of the year. He hasn't been playing a whole lot at all. The absence of him and putting a lot on DeAndre Hopkins has definitely not helped Kyler at all either. So I think they still need to add some weapons around Kyler. They're taking a step in the right direction though. It's too early to be out on Cliff Kingsbury, and it's too early to be out on the Arizona Cardinals. I think that this is just a disappointment more than anything else.
Yeah, and I do think that we potentially were just a year early on them, right? Collectively. I think fans, people that follow the NFL, were excited about the possibilities and expected to see that this year. But, you know, this is the second year of Kyler Murray, Cliff Kingsbury, this marriage. And second year isn't necessarily supposed to be the successful one. But, like, by year three, you got to make a playoffs and show, you know, what that potential looks like. So next year is the year. But this is still a step in the right direction. There's clear needs around Kyler and on this team that prevent them from being that sort of 10-win team that we thought they could. And that's okay as long as you can fix those needs and address those needs, albeit through free agency or the draft. So room to grow for Arizona, but I agree with you. I don't think this isn't a successful season because they go 8-8 and barely miss out on a playoff, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, this is kind of the way we were with the Browns last year. There was high expectations.
Right, exactly. Yeah, this is what it feels like. You're exactly right, Mitch.
Yeah, I mean, like, high expectations, and they just fell short. I mean,
right. It was just a year early, and now the Browns got the right pieces in place, and they figured it out, and they made their first playoff in 20 years. The Cardinals will be fine. I think they'll be there next year. I have no doubt about their ability. You know, and their ability to be a double-digit win team and to be an exciting playoff team. It just maybe we were just too excited about it and hope to see it this year, but it's more likely in the year to come. So,
yes.
All right, Mitch. So that's about it for those teams that were on the cusp that missed out.
Before we move on, here's the definition of Caillou. Caillou is a spoiled little shit TV show on a TV show on PBS. Caillou can't grow hair, not because he has cancer or progeria, but because he sucks. And even his own body recognizes that he does not deserve hair or food or love. That is a Caillou.
Damn, bro.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, Caillou.
I believe I've heard this definition before on the Spitballers. Go follow the Spitballers podcast. But that is what a Caillou is, and I would like to add that to our vernacular moving forward. This is a Caillou. This is a guy that just sucks. So
all right.
But yeah, there's the definition of Caillou and what Caillou's.
Thanks
all about.
For teaching us something, Mitch.
He's just a shitty. Shitty little kid.
It's always good to learn from the internet.
Yeah. You can all right, learn so much from the internet.
You really can. That's how I learn everything. I don't read. Who has time for that? That's what YouTube's for.
That's exactly what it is for. Yeah.
So let's talk about the NFL draft. Mitch, one of our favorite things, one of my favorite things to consume content about the NFL draft. And as you mentioned earlier, draft order set. The first 18 picks are set. With, you know, the playoffs being determined, we know who will be picking where. Now we can start speculating about who teams will be looking at, what teams will look to trade. And that's what, essentially, I would just like to do a little bit of that here today. Very early speculation, ideas, thoughts that we have on certain teams and where they're picking, position groups like quarterback and where that could get interesting and so forth. But I'd like to start by just going through the draft order that we know, 1 through 18.
Okay.
So we'll start with that. Starting at the top, number one, we'll have the Jacksonville Jaguars. At number two, the New York Jets. Number three, the Miami Dolphins with the pick from the Houston Texans. And number four, the Atlanta Falcons. Five, Cincinnati Bengals. Six, Philadelphia Eagles. Seven, the Detroit Lions. Eight, the Carolina Panthers. Nine, the Denver Broncos. 10, the Dallas Cowboys. Outside of the top 10, the New York Giants at 11, San Francisco 49ers at 12, Los Angeles Chargers at 13, Minnesota Vikings at 14, the New England Patriots at 15, the Arizona Cardinals 16, Vegas Raiders 17, and the Miami Dolphins at 18, Mitch.
Hmm.
So let's start here at the top in these first five. And what always drives the narrative around the draft and the draft order is the quarterbacks. Where do the quarterbacks go? What order do they go in? What teams like which guy? And how is that going to affect the way that it all plays out? You remember back to the 2018 draft, right? Five quarterbacks taken in the first round, but there was no consensus on who the number one guy would be. Would it be Josh Allen? Would it be Josh Rosen? Would it be Baker Mayfield? Was Sam Darnold going to be the number one pick? I mean, we didn't really know what the Browns were going to do until right before they did it. And so this year is different than that, right? We know the number one pick, right, Mitch? It's Trevor Lawrence. Is there any question about that?
I think there might be.
Oh, come on. Are we? Okay. All right. What's the question?
No. Look, do I doubt that Trevor Lawrence will be taken number one? Not at all. But I think there's a question to be asked because there's been a lot of links to Urban Meyer, former Ohio State coach, going to Jacksonville. And it sounds like that he's already been in conversations with Shad Khan, the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars, that he's already kind of assimilating his staff to be ready to take this Jacksonville job. And if he comes there, he coached Justin Fields over there at Ohio State. And I know that there's a lot of people that are high on Justin Fields. Justin Fields is probably going to be a top three pick, at least top three, if not top two. So I think there is a world where Jacksonville, if Urban Meyer is the head coach, that there is a world where Justin Fields gets taken at number one over Trevor Lawrence. Now, do I see it happening? I don't think so, because I think there's going to be a lot of pressure from the front office, even if Urban Meyer is there, to take Trevor Lawrence, because Trevor Lawrence, I think, is the best quarterback in this draft. But, I mean, there's even a lot of quarterback gurus out there, a lot of quarterback guys that are saying, look, Justin Fields is the real deal, and Urban Meyer coached him. So why wouldn't they take, if Urban Meyer's in Jacksonville, if he takes that job, why wouldn't they take Justin Fields over Trevor Lawrence? That's the only question I have, but I feel like it is a safe bet right now to say that that Trevor Lawrence will be in a Jacksonville Jaguars uniform come next season.
That's interesting, Mitch, because I will say this. That line of thinking, that sort of possibility, I agree, definitely exists. But I still believe Trevor Lawrence is the number one pick regardless. If you're Jacksonville in that scenario, you leverage yourself into like the number two pick and you let the Jets pay you to move up and get Trevor Lawrence so that you still get Justin Fields at number two and you coerce somebody into paying you to take that number one. So I think Trevor Lawrence is still the first guy taken off the board. I'd be shocked if they stayed at number one and took Justin Fields. But I think the Urban Meyer thing, and if that becomes the case, will definitely play a factor in that, no doubt. We'll have to see how much, you know, he likes Justin Fields, or is Trevor Lawrence by and far the guy? The real conversation starts at number two with the Jets, who will have the second pick, presumably look at quarterback, and it'll be who do they like more. If it is Lawrence at number one, is it Justin Fields? Is it Zach Wilson from BYU, who has gotten a ton of hype? People have been moving him up further and further up the board into that QB2 range. There's now a conversation. And again, as I mentioned earlier, it'll come back to who do you like at that position? What do the Jets want in their quarterback? And which one of those guys fits the mold? But Mitch, as we go through the top 10 here, I just want you to point out, let's talk about some teams you think might be in the market to take one of these QBs.
Yeah, I mean, of some teams that I think are going to be looking to take a quarterback, it really depends on what the quarterback situation is for these teams in the top 10, because there's a lot of question marks at the quarterback position in these top 10. I think the first one that you look at is probably Atlanta. They're sitting at number four. Matt Ryan, there's been a lot of talks about him being moved, him not returning to Atlanta next year. That's a team that I could see maybe trying to make a trade up to number two to go get Justin Fields, because I don't think he falls below three. Not that Miami would take Justin Fields, and nor do I think they should take Justin Fields, but or a Zach Wilson or
but who, I mean, that's another one that's been mentioned, though. I've heard people already discuss, as we kind of alluded to earlier, was Miami.
I've heard Zach Wilson going number three to Miami. So
is there, so I guess my question with Miami real quick, is there a logical reasoning to saying there are so few times that we can end up with a top three pick that if we feel like one of these quarterbacks could be a franchise guy and we're not sold on Tua yet, that we need to take advantage of that?
No.
Or is that just overthinking it?
No, because I think if the Jets retain number two, they take a quarterback and they move on from Sam Darnold. And then I believe that the Dolphins, the next logical pick for the Dolphins, if they were to stay at number three, would be Penei Sewell.
Right.
Get someone to protect Tua. So I think that would be the next logical pick. So if the Jets stay at two, I think they take the quarterback and they move on from Sam Darnold and they find a suitor for taking on Sam Darnold. And that could be a Detroit. I mean, I know that there's a lot of talk about Matt Stafford getting out of Detroit. There's teams like your Carolina Panthers who have really kind of pieced together a quarterback deal. I know. I love Teddy Bridgewater, but I don't think he's a long-term answer. There's a thing like Sam Darnold going to the Carolina Panthers, which I know you, being an old-school SC fan, would probably love Sam Darnold going to the Carolina Panthers. I don't know if I think that would be the best fit for you. But there's questions like that. There's questions about the Dallas Cowboys. Are they going to offer Dak the big contract? Is Dak going to go to free agency and get signed by someone else? There's a lot of question marks, but I think if the Jets stay at two, they take the quarterback. Dolphins at three take Penei Sewell, which is what they should take. They should take like someone to protect Tua. You're never going to find another offensive lineman like Penei Sewell. I think it's pretty rare that you find someone with a talent skill set like Penei Sewell.
Yes.
But as far as the other teams down the list in this top 10 that need a quarterback, throw the Eagles out. They need to give Jalen Hurts a shot. If you're an Eagles fan, don't even waste your time fantasizing about drafting another quarterback, because Jalen Hurts, I think, he's the kind of guy that I really think is going to be successful in the NFL. And I think could be a Lamar Jackson type guy, where he is going to be able to tear you up with his arm, but have be just as lethal with his legs and really put up big numbers on you. We saw him do it earlier this year when he rushed over 100 yards. Outside of that, I mean, how committed to Drew Lock is Denver?
Right.
That would be another one. And then the aforementioned Dallas Cowboys. And what are they going to do with Dak Prescott? Are they going to move on and go with someone young? Or are they going to offer Dak the contract he deserves, which is a fat-ass contract? So there are a lot of options here as far as who could take a quarterback. Throw Cincinnati out. I mean, Joe Burrow's got to come back from that knee injury.
Yeah, I mean, oddly enough, Mitch, is Cincinnati the only lock for not taking a quarterback? Like, every single other team, including Miami, you could make a case that they could or should take a QB or look to take a QB. Only Cincinnati at number 5 does it make no sense because they just spent the number 1 pick on Joe Burrow. But they're probably the only one.
That's the only one, but I think you're a crazy person if you try to make an argument for Miami or Philly taking a quarterback. I think you're a crazy person.
Okay, so I think they're different scenarios. 100% different scenarios.
Sure,
you took Tua at number 5 last year, and you are on the same page there. We're on the same page as far as Jalen Hurts. But there is an argument, the same way that it is for Miami, that you don't find yourself drafting this high very often. So because you're so close, do you take a chance on a guy at that point? Can you move up to number 3 and get one of the top 3 quarterbacks? And is that going to put you in a better position than with Jalen Hurts? I would assume that I would rather have Justin Fields or Zach Wilson than Jalen Hurts. The question is, what's the price to move from 6 to 3? And is that worth it long-term for your team? Is that a better situation? I don't know if that is, but I think Philly has a legitimate reason to think about that.
I think
Miami, no. But, I mean, Jalen, like, the investment into Jalen Hurts wasn't that much to move on to a top 5 quarterback, you know?
I agree with that.
I think they should stick with him. I think they should stick with him. They should build around him, give him a year, because I think he could be successful just like you. But there is, like, somewhere in your head, you're like, the value is too good to pass up, right? Like, so it kind of makes, you know, it depends on how sold you are how sold they are on Jalen Hurts.
I just think it's really advantageous for... So let's say, so here's the pick that I think Cincinnati's going to make, and I think that they should make, is Ja'Marr Chase at number 5. Go get the wide receiver that played with Joe Burrow at LSU.
Oh, yeah.
Go get Ja'Marr Chase at number 5. Number 6, if Philly's anywhere near smart, they get DeVonta Smith, the other wide receiver that should go in the top 10, and go ahead and take DeVonta Smith. I'm pretty sure DeVonta Smith played with Jalen Hurts at Alabama.
Their paths probably crossed at some point. I don't know
how much they actually played with each other.
Right.
DeVonta Smith probably was a freshman actually when the year that
I'm pretty sure the year that Tua took over in the national championship game and won it, DeVonta Smith was also a freshman.
Okay,
and Jalen Hurts would have been on that team. So
there's some crossroads there, but
right.
I mean, I think there's some sort of chemistry thing that you need to do here if you're Cincinnati and Philadelphia. You need to think about taking the wide receiver. And I think Ja'Marr Chase is a great fit for Joe Burrow when he comes back from that ACL, who sounds like he's ahead of schedule as far as rehab goes. Give him a guy that he's thrown the ball to a ton over there at LSU. Give him Ja'Marr Chase. And then Philly, take DeVonta Smith, because you guess what? You've lacked wide receivers. Your number one, Alshon Jeffrey, has been hurt the majority of the time he's been in Philadelphia. You need a new wide receiver. The Jalen Reagor did not pan out to be the rookie wide receiver that you thought he was. And he could pan out in the coming years, but he definitely wasn't what you thought he was going to be in his first year. So go ahead and get another one and try it again and go get DeVonta Smith, who probably might win the Heisman Trophy this year.
He did. He did, by the way. That happened like 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, so DeVonta Smith, Heisman Trophy winner. Go get DeVonta Smith at number 6. It just makes too much sense to me. And if Philly were to take another quarterback here, if they were to take a Trey Lance or a Zach Wilson, I think they'd just be wasting the talent of Jalen Hurts and what he has to offer to this organization, or at least giving him a look.
Yeah, I mean, Philly's in an interesting spot, and I agree with you because they're not, like, built to win. Like, they need to sort of, if it's not a rebuild, it's a retool. Like, they need, you know, this roster is going to have some turnover the next couple years, which means that you're not a team contending for a Super Bowl. So, worst case scenario, you play Jalen Hurts, you give him the full year, he's not the guy, you win four games, and look where you are. Right back here next year, and then you know that this guy that we took in the second round a couple years ago, not our guy. Now we got to look for our quarterback. So, you know, and if it works out for them, well, then it works out for them. It's a win-win. So I'm with you there that they should wait, but I do understand the argument of, you know, if you can move up to three and you feel better about your future with Justin Fields or Zach Wilson than you do with Jalen Hurts, then you probably should make that move. And I don't know within the Philadelphia Eagles organization what that feeling will be like, and we'll see what the price to move into that Dolphins spot is and what teams are willing to make that, you know, pay that price. But Philly sitting at number six gives themselves the best chance to do that over other teams that might be interested, like Detroit at number seven, like Carolina at number eight. You mentioned Denver at nine, even moving farther back. San Francisco's at 12. You know, what if they want to move? 12 to 3 is a hefty price to pay, but Philly can do it because it's only moving up three spots. So there will have to be a decision there for the Eagles, and we'll see what, you know, comes about there.
Sure. Yeah.
I think I agree with you there. So just looking at these teams and some of the best fits, right? The guys that make the most sense in the directions. I think you're absolutely right with Cincinnati. If Penei Sewell is no longer on the board at five and he's not available, you're absolutely right, Jamar Chase. Pair him up with Joe Burrow and just be grateful for that pairing. That'll just be a ton of fun, you know, moving forward. Any other teams with interesting spots? I think for Carolina, sitting at eight, if they don't go quarterback, which I heavily think that they should, I love linebacker Micah Parsons out of Penn State, who was an opt-out this year, but really strong in the run game. They need help on the defensive side of the ball still, and especially at linebacker, pairing him with Shaq Thompson would be a great combo. So that's kind of one that comes to mind. Mitch, you know, we talked about Penei Sewell to Miami. We talked about Jamar Chase, Cincinnati. Any other teams and players kind of stick out to you right now?
Well, Carolina was actually another one that stuck out to me, and I would love them to take Patrick Surtain out of Alabama.
Oh, yeah.
I would love them to
get corner.
They do need corner. They need corner in a bad way. I believe they're one of the worst in the NFL against the pass this year. So,
yes.
Go get a Patrick Surtain. There's another guy, Caleb Farley out of Virginia Tech.
From Virginia Tech, yeah. And eight might be a little early for these guys, but they might, you know, but that's where, depending on the combine, how these guys write, you might feel good about him at eight.
Right.
You might move back a little bit, still get a top corner. There are definitely options at corner. I do like that as well for them.
I think another one that really sticks out to me is the Patriots at 15.
Yeah.
And if there's a quarterback around, which there will be, there's six of them. And so I think there's going to be a quarterback there. They're pretty much their choice at pretty much who isn't Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence. It could be there at number 15. I like Mac Jones a lot. I think would be a good fit in the Patriots system, kind of that pro style type offense.
Belichick loves Bama.
Belichick
loves
does
Nick Saban.
Love
They're
Alabama.
Close.
Exactly.
So, I mean, an Alabama QB like Mac Jones at 15, I think Mac Jones, I'm going to say this now, I think Mac Jones is going to be a top 20 pick, and I think there's going to be five QBs taken in the top 20 this year in the NFL draft. And Mac Jones is going to be that fifth guy, and it could definitely be a team like the Patriots in that mid to late teens that says, you know what, like, yeah, we got to go get a guy. There are so many teams that need quarterback or have potential questions at quarterback, Mitch, that there's no way that, you know, we're going to get through the top 20 picks and only like three guys are gone. I just can't believe it.
No, I mean, San Francisco is still another one with, I know Jimmy Garoppolo is there, but a quarterback question. So
yeah. Minnesota with Kirk Cousins could be a question.
Well, Kirk
Las
Cousins
Vegas
played really
17
well this year. Kirk Cousins
could
played
be
really
a question.
Well this year.
Could be a question though. And you sit, you're looking at the future of your franchise. You're 7-9 and you're saying, are we sold? If a guy falls, if Trey Lance, all of a sudden people aren't as high on him, what do you do there? It is very interesting, and that doesn't even include the playoff teams like the Saints, the Steelers, the Tampa Bay, veteran QB, Indianapolis, veteran QBs, not long-term options. If they look at QB as well, that's going to be very fascinating to watch, Mitch. We will have much more time to get into draft conversations. One, we'll probably have movement within this top 15 range. We'll also have post-combine draft pro days. We'll get a better idea from where things sit as we move forward, which we'll continue to monitor. But always fun to begin the draft conversations, and we'll continue to bring this up as we lead up to the draft in April.
Yeah, no, this is... Draft talk is so much fun. It's so much fun.
It's the best. It's the best. All right, Mitch, that's about it for the week 17. Before we get in to the wild card weekend picks, we have another Mount Rushmore. We did this the last podcast. We did the Mount Rushmore of Los Angeles sports. We put our top four in, that represent sports in the city. We're going to kind of do this for different cities around the country. This week, Mitch, we are doing the Mount Rushmore for Seattle sports.
Yeah. Yeah, we got, so we have LA and Chicago under our belt.
Right.
We're getting into Seattle. Dallin, you're from the PNW. Yeah, I mean, you're from California.
I'm an adopted son.
You're an adopted son of the PNW, but lots of sports history up there. And so the Mount Rushmore of Seattle, and honestly, this was a tougher one than I thought it was going to be.
Really?
Yeah, this was a tougher one than I thought it was going to be. But let's just get right into it and
great
debate, because I had some honorable mentions. So let's start with our HMs here. I had Sue Bird.
Oh, that's a good one.
Sue Bird was an honorable mention. She almost cracked the top five. Like, she was really close. Top four.
We might have snubbed her. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, this is a top
She's
four.
She's fantastic for the Seattle Storm, you know?
Yeah. This is kind of in supplement of the top five list. So it is a top four because there's four people on Mount Rushmore. So Sue Bird, I mean, she almost got in there. Edgar Martinez almost got in there. Sean Kemp. Steve Largent and Randy Johnson were my honorable mentions.
Oh, yeah, those are good. Yeah, pretty much the same on my end. I don't want to mention all mine, though, because it might tease who I don't or don't have.
Okay. Well,
but I had very similar ones to you.
Okay. All right. Sounds good.
That's all I'm going to say there.
Well, okay, so let's start at the top. Let's start at the top here. Mount Rushmore, number one face you got to put on, Ken Griffey Jr.
Easy.
I mean, that's an easy one. What he meant to Seattle baseball, what he meant to the Seattle Mariners, when they thought that they were going to fold, when they were going to move. I mean, Ken Griffey Jr. was the face of Seattle sports for an extended period of time. A guy that came up through their minor league system, stayed with the franchise up until, I believe, the 2002, 2003 range when he got traded to the Cincinnati Reds. So many legendary plays. I mean, obviously... there's the iconic call by Dave Niehaus of the slide at the plate with Ken Griffey Jr. in the 96 divisional series. Ken Griffey Jr. just means more to not just Seattle baseball, but Seattle sports as a whole and what he's contributed there. So
yeah, and really baseball as a whole, and you know what I mean, like, he was so represented, especially during that time in which he played, in which he kind of hit his peak. He was really one of the best players in the entire league. He won an MVP, 13-time All-Star, 10-time Gold Glover. Ken Griffey Jr. was everything, and for the Mariners, they haven't been able to reach the sort of peaks that they did at the height of the Griffey era. We know that they haven't been to an MLB postseason in 20 years now, since 2001, and they haven't been able to reach that sort of heights that they did with Griffey. And he'll always be synonymous with the best eras of Seattle Mariners baseball, and hopefully better eras for them to come. But so far, I mean, he is, if you think of Seattle sports, that's the first guy that came to my mind.
I mean, what do you think about it? Seattle sports as a whole before Ken Griffey Jr., the Pacific Northwest was a black hole for sports.
Yeah.
I mean, there was nothing going on in Seattle. I mean, Seattle, Portland, I mean, that whole, those are the kind of the two big cities up there, and there was nothing going on. Nothing going on sports-wise until Ken Griffey Jr. came around. He really ignited the Pacific Northwest sports scene, that's for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. And the other guy around that same time frame, right, on a different sport, the glove, Gary Payton for the Seattle Supersonics, you know, they made some finals runs in the 90s. They had a pretty good team, and that was, you know, a height for the Sonics. That was a really good era. Gary Payton, that was an easy one, right,
to put on. Yeah, Gary's here. The glove's on mine. I mean, this is just, I mean, it's easy. I mean, those two were easy.
Right.
You got Ken, and you got the glove. So, I mean, and what Gary meant to the Sonics organization, and what I really hope when Seattle eventually does get a franchise back in Seattle, when Seattle gets an NBA franchise again, which they should, and when they expand, Seattle should get the Sonics back, and it's not even a conversation. The story, I think, of Gary Payton should be revived, because I feel like it's kind of been brushed under the rug since Seattle's gone away to Oklahoma City. I feel like Gary Payton's kind of been this forgotten superstar, this forgotten all-star, like we used to do on this show. I mean, he's this forgotten Hall of Famer that no one ever talks about, because he spent the majority of his career in a city that no longer has an NBA franchise. And that's sad, right? Because Gary Payton he is the poster child for Pacific Northwest basketball. I mean,
no doubt. Yeah. And I mean, and a lot of that too goes back to, I mean, he was a star in his own right, but very good on the defensive side of the ball. And that is always underappreciated, you know what I mean? In any sort of sport.
Right.
But I don't think that helps his case either, but yes, I mean, Gary Payton, definitely one of the best, Mitch. Let's go. We have a Mariner. We have a Supersonic. Let's talk about the Seahawks.
Yeah.
Obviously, we have to have one guy here from the Seahawks.
We both have the same Seahawk. It's Russell Wilson.
It's Russell Wilson. Yeah. And there was, to me, I want to say this now before we get to the fourth guy, there was a question of Marshawn Lynch there for me. But
there was a question of Steve Largent for me.
And that one too. Steve Largent was an honorable mention for me because iconic. But there's nothing more iconic and memorable for a franchise as the quarterback. And Russell Wilson has by far been the best quarterback Seattle has ever had. And he means the most to them. He won them a Super Bowl. He's been the face of the franchise for 8 years now, and he'll go down as one of the greatest Seahawks of all time, even if he doesn't play another snap with them. So that one was easy to me. If there was going to be a Seahawk on this Mount Rushmore Seattle sports, it had to be Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Seattle quarterbacks, you have Russell Wilson. Then far below him, you have Matt Hasselbeck.
Right.
And then the next guy up is, what, Jim Zorn? Like,
I guess
that's next guy up. So they just don't have that guy. And they just didn't have that guy until Russell Wilson came along. And look, I mean, he brought this city their first Super Bowl. This is the guy in Seattle right now. I mean, he is what Ken Griffey Jr. was to the city of Seattle when Ken Griffey Jr. was around. I mean, this is how important this athlete is to that city. Russell Wilson, if he were to go anywhere else, it would be a tragedy. It would be
sacrilege.
Tragedy. You could almost make an argument, I think, for Russell Wilson being the first face on Mount Rushmore over Ken Griffey Jr. I think you could almost make an argument.
I think by the time it's all said and done, potentially, but there's a long story to be written for Russell Wilson in Seattle still.
There are still about 5 or 6 years left of that. Yeah.
And because his career's still going on and we don't know the ultimate impact, Ken Griffey, that's a whole, you know, that's...
And the impact
that was a guy.
Of... Yeah, and that Ken Griffey guy, had an impact on sports as a whole there, so...
Right, not just football. And Russell Wilson, obviously, he's been one of the best quarterbacks since he's been in the league, but, you know, over the last 3 to 5 years, I think he's really proven that he has been one of the top five best quarterbacks in the league consistently. And I think he's, you know, continued to prove that even in this year in 2020.
Right.
So, okay, Mitch, this was consensus easy. Griffey, Payton, Russell Wilson. Who is number four?
So number four, I feel like those top three were pretty easy.
Right.
Those were three. Those three were easy. Like I said, Edgar came in the conversation for me. Sean Kemp came in the conversation for me. But I had to put Ichiro.
Ichiro. Yes, that was the one I almost kind of forgot about. And then once it clicked, I was like, oh, duh. It's Ichiro Suzuki.
It's Ichiro. I mean, what he like, not only meant to Seattle sports, but Japanese baseball.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this guy, he comes into the league. Not only does he win 2001, so that 116-win season.
Right.
He comes into the league. Not only does he win Rookie of the Year, he wins MVP in the same year. I mean, this guy, he has the single-season hit record. This guy's right. a 3,000-hit guy. The majority of his season is spent in Seattle. He's not a true five-tool player because he doesn't have the ability to drive the ball over the fence. But he has four out of the five tools, and that is fielding, throwing, contact, power to the gaps, and then there's power over the fence. He has all four of those except power over the fence. So Ichiro, what he meant to Seattle sports, what he meant to Japanese baseball is unparalleled. There will never be another guy that will parallel or even come close to what Ichiro meant to the game of baseball. And the fact that happened in Seattle, you have to give Ichiro that fourth spot. You have to.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. I mean, Ichiro is just iconic with baseball and with baseball in Seattle. And I mentioned it with Ken Griffey, and it remains true with Ichiro. That peak for Ichiro, that rookie season you mentioned, that was the best, you know, that was the peak for Seattle Mariners baseball. You know, it was one of the best regular seasons.
116 wins.
You know, it's the most wins anyone's ever had. And yeah, they fell short. You know, they couldn't reach the World Series, win the World Series that year. But that is the peak for Mariners baseball. And the people that you think about when you think about that season are the guys like Ken Griffey and the guys like Ichiro Suzuki. What he meant for the Seattle Mariners out after moving on from Ken Griffey Jr. not that long after. And Ichiro stayed there for so long and continued to be successful and continued to play so well. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It was again, you said it perfectly. The first three were obvious, thought about it for a second, and all of a sudden it was like, Ichiro, yes, that's it. That's the four. That's the four
Ichiro
guys.
Honestly, Ichiro, in my mind, I don't even know why this was difficult. Now that I look at the list and I start to talk it through, because this should be an easy top four. This shouldn't. I mean, there's no one that comes close to Griff, Russ, the glove, and Ichiro. There's no one that comes close.
Yeah.
But
no doubt.
Yeah, I love the Seattle Rushmore. I mean, I would love to, like, once we get these Mount Rushmores, keep track of them and then put them in a bracket.
Oh, and then compare the four and then against each other?
Put them in a bracket and see who winds up having the best Mount Rushmore. I mean, wouldn't that be awesome? That'd be cool.
That would be interesting. I mean, we have these. There's a record, which we shall keep, of these. And yeah, I mean, maybe once we get, you know, through enough cities,
we got to get through at least 12. I think we got to get at least through 12 because then we have a substantial bracket here. So.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
But anyway,
no doubt. I love that. All right, Mitch. Well, that's the Mount Rushmore and we feel pretty good about that. So
I do feel pretty good about it.
I mean, I feel pretty good about it too. You know, No regrets.
Hey, Dallin, right here. Let's go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we have our quick picks, our semi-quick picks, which is going to be a little bit of a wild card preview. We're going to be talking about those games, and we have a special little surprise coming up for you listeners here to go along with a quick pick. So stick around, and we'll be right back.
Thank you guys for listening to the Sports Hour today. Be sure, if you haven't already, to follow our socials. You can find us on Twitter at Sports Hour Guys, Instagram at The Sports Hour Guys, and you can like our Facebook page. Be sure to follow those socials. Interact with us. We want to hear from you. Now back to the show. All right, welcome back into the Sports Hour. Mitch. As we, last little thing here on the pod that we're going to do is obviously talk about wild card weekend in the NFL, the six games that we have. But this is kind of coming in the traditional spot that we do our weekly quick picks. And as I mentioned in the beginning, Mitch is victorious this year.
Woo!
The quick picks. So congratulations, buddy. Mitch famously lost a couple years ago, had to shave his head. My punishment this year, basically, there's a lot of reasons why I'm not shaving my head. One, my wife is a hairdresser, and I think she would divorce me. I am not exaggerating, and I think most who know my wife understand what I say. So, I like my marriage. So what we're going to do is a little bit different. This is what we've decided.
That week and on the pod, look shockingly like your father. So
that is true. And for that reason, she would also divorce me. So there's just a lot of, you know, built in there. So I have come up with, Mitch is, I'm going to come here on the podcast every episode, and I'm going to praise my friend and say whatever he wants me to say for like 30 seconds. For being the loser.
For the next 8 months, essentially.
For the next 8 months until the NFL season, which I feel like is a pretty fair punishment. And he has given me no breaks here. I am being forced to say what I'm about to say, and I'm not excited about it. But it's the price for losing.
Do we have,
you know,
king music? Do we have like music we could play like I'm a king or something like that?
Future Dallin has picked out music and sent it to Mitchell to play right here underneath this. Okay. So it has been done.
First of all, I would like you to preface whatever you're about to say with, oh, dear and benevolent one.
Oh my God. Okay. Oh, dear and benevolent one, Mitchmo. Mitchmo is the most handsome man I know.
Okay.
And everybody knows it. Every pick that I have made in our week-to-week NFL quick picks this season that was different than the one you made was trash.
Yes, yes.
I am a garbage human.
Yes, yes, yes.
As much as I love my Dodgers, considering they played less than half a season, they deserve an asterisk next to their World Series.
Oh, lovely.
Place them next to the 2017 Astros.
Yes.
The Los Asterisk Dodgers.
Oh, the Los Asterisk Dodgers has a ring to it.
Mitch is the Tom Brady of picking NFL games on a week-to-week basis, and I am like Chase Daniel.
Oh, no, charmingly, you're more like a Nathan Peterman, I must say.
Charmingly mediocre enough to hang around 3 years longer than I should.
Oh, yes.
You happy?
Hey, that's a king spot.
Hey, I wrote that myself. I hope you appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm just going to... I'm leaving it up to you. I'm just telling you what I want you to say about me. And then you're going to... Yeah. I want you to use your creativity. You're good with words.
Yeah, I am. So, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's a good start.
It's a good start. I know. I can't wait to do this for another 8 months.
I wish you would have mentioned more about how more handsome I am. So.
Okay. Well, next week, buddy, I'll make sure it's just all about how beautiful you are. Actually, yes, that's what I'm doing. Next week, it's going to be solely about how handsome Mitch is. I'm going to do a whole thing about how handsome Mitch is.
There we go.
This is going to be great. I might actually enjoy this by the end. I don't know. We'll
find, you might, hey, we'll find might as well out. Have fun with it. Might as well have fun with it.
Right, exactly. If I'm going to lose, you know, we're going to do this right. But hey, okay, enough of this. Can we get into the picks now?
I mean, I couldn't have enough of it, but sure, let's get into
okay, all right. Yeah, that's fine. All right, so as we mentioned, Super Wild Card Weekend, 3 games on Saturday, 3 games on Sunday. Let's start at the Saturday early game AFC matchup. Indianapolis Colts, 11-5, don't get the division win over the Tennessee Titans with the tiebreaker, so they end up in the wild card and they have to travel to Buffalo against the 13-3 Bills. Mitch, wow, a tough pull for Indy. And I love Indy, and I was very I was very high on them going into the season. I think they underperformed slightly for my expectations, but still a very, very talented team. But you mentioned this early about Buffalo. They are playing with so much confidence. They're playing so loose. I just don't see how Indianapolis can get this win.
I just don't either. And I really do like Indy as well. I think what Philip Rivers has been able to do over there, coming over from San Diego, is he's done a fantastic job. He started off rough. Those first 3 or 4 weeks, he had a rough start. But he really turned it around. And this Bills team is playing so loose. They're having so much fun playing the game right now. I mean, this is reminiscent of that run and shoot, Marv Levy-led Bills team of the early 90s. This is just a team that's having a ton of fun right now. Right now, the lines are Buffalo Bills -6.5, over under 55 points. I'm going to take the over in this one, and I'm going to put money on Bills -6.5. I mean, I got to take the Bills in this one. I mean, this is a team that with so many offensive weapons available at Josh Allen's disposal, and with the way that Josh Allen is playing and with the defense that they have available to them, there's just no way that in the winter in Buffalo with the Colts that play in a dome are going to go to Buffalo and beat the Bills. There's just no way. I got to take the Bills here.
Well, okay. So I don't know if there's no way. I am, for the record, I'm taking the Bills as well. We're both picking the Bills at home. That makes sense. But there is a scenario that Indy wins this game, Mitch. And this is, I'm going to play this out for you. This is how it's going to work.
Play it out for me. Indianapolis
has a fantastic defense. It's been one of the best defenses in the league. And yes, Buffalo, great offense. But you hope that your defense can cause some turnovers, be hectic enough, playoff Josh Allen comes out like it did last year, right? And you hold the offense to 24 to 27 points, right? A moderate amount, but you're not, you know, pitching a shutout with your defense. And the offense behind a guy who's building a lot of momentum right now in his young rookie season, Jonathan Taylor, rides a run game, controls the clock, and does enough to squeak out a win with a dominant running performance by the rookie and a stellar defense. That's the scenario. And honestly, Jonathan Taylor just rushed for 200 yards. Who's to say this kid can't keep rolling and they can control the clock and keep Josh Allen off the field? And this Bills defense is talented, but if you put him out there for 35, 40 plus minutes, it's going to be really tough. It's going to be really tough for them to keep steady. And so that's the scenario for Indianapolis to win that. I'm still taking the Bills, but I definitely think it's not out of the question in my mind.
I see, and I don't see that path because of the guy who's under center, who's now played in a dome and played in San Diego. He doesn't play in a lot of cold weather games. And they're going to be in Buffalo Saturday morning where the low is 21 degrees with a wind. So there will be a wind chill factor.
Even better for a running game. Even better for Jonathan Taylor the rock 35 times.
But with the Buffalo Bills playing in that climate for so long and being able to throw the football through that climate, give me the Bills. There is a fighter's chance, I think. And I say that loosely because I think that there is more than a fighter's chance for Indy to get a win. It's not like that's a one-punch deal, right? They could go out and put the perfect game plan together and go get a win against Buffalo. But with what we have looking at the forecast right now in Buffalo going into Saturday, what Indy has been doing, what their quarterback has been accustomed to for the last 18 years of his career. I mean,
the guy's played outside before, Mitch. You know,
he played outside in San Diego.
I mean, okay, he played in cold weather. It's not like he's never touched a football when it's below 30.
Yeah, but there's an obvious correlation between guys who play in warm weather cities and then go to cold weather cities and play playoff games. There's a direct correlation. So it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me to say that there is a clear path. But there is a murky path for Indy to get it done. I just don't see it happening.
Sure. I want to say two things. One, I think we're diminishing the Colts a little bit here. The Colts are a really good football team, and they've been really good football team pretty much all year. I'm not saying you are specifically. I just want to say in the conversation, I want to say the Colts are really good, and the Buffalo Bills are not the Kansas City Chiefs. They're not unbeatable, and I know they're playing really well right now, but they also were playing really well into the playoffs last year, and then they laid an egg. And Josh Allen has looked like a much different guy this year, but there is going to always be a question about these young quarterbacks until they win it in the playoffs. Can they do it? It's going to be the same with Josh Allen this year as it is with Lamar Jackson, which we'll get to later, but until we've seen it, I'm not going to be that confident in Buffalo yet. The regular season has been great. They've put up a fantastic year. But win a playoff game. Like, let's win this home game convincingly, and then we can talk. I'm not going to give them all of that now just because they won 13 games in the regular season.
Well, they beat the Patriots pretty handy last year with Tom Brady at the helm. So I will give them this benefit of the doubt and say that they could get this done.
So. The Bills didn't.
Oh, no, that was the Titans.
Yeah, that was the Titans. The Bills lost to the Texans.
You're right. You're right. Sorry. My bad. Right. My bad. Mute point. But I still give it to the Bills.
No worries. No, I mean, and I'm picking the Bills as well. That's an easy one. Mitch, let's go to the next game. This is an NFC West matchup. Los Angeles Rams, 10-6, get the win in week 17. They're going to take on the Seattle Seahawks in Seattle, 12-4 for the Seahawks this year. This is one of the best matchups in the wild card weekend. You got the interdivision matchup, which is great. This sort of rivalry that's existed between the Rams and the Seahawks. I am not going to lie, Mitch. This Goff injury has really quelled. I was very excited about the Rams. And about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I probably would have took the Rams in this game. But considering Goff coming after this surgery and what he's going to look like, I just can't take the Rams, despite how good the defense is. Really, really good that defense is, despite how good it is. I just can't take them with the injuries to Goff and the uncertainty there at quarterback.
Yeah, I don't know if I can either. I mean, so you got the Seahawks in this one, correct?
Yeah, so I'm going to take the Seahawks in this one.
So I got the Seahawks as well. Look, the line right now is Seahawks -4, over under 42.5. I think I'm going to take the over again. And not by a lot. I mean, 45 points total seems about right what is going to be scored. But I think you can feel safe taking the over in this one. But I take Seattle at -4.5. You look at the weather forecast, and we're incorporating some weather into this because
You love the weather, don't you?
Well, it matters this time of year. It does matter this time of year, especially in the winter. We're going to see some sunshine in Seattle. There's a 20% chance of precipitation in the Seattle area. They're going to have some rain before, but they're playing an artificial field, so sloppiness not really going to be a factor here. You look at the previous matchups between the Rams and the Seahawks. Rams took the first matchup 23-16, which would put them at the under. Right at the under. I think at 40.
That'd be 39.
That'd be 39. So put them at the under.
39.
And then the Rams lost the Seahawks in the second matchup 20-9. So they put them at the under again. But I think that the scoring thing is gonna clean itself up. I'm gonna take the over. Look, Seattle's just, I mean, like you said, this whole quarterback thing is a big issue right now. With the Rams, Derek Goff. Gosh dang it! What am I gonna say? Jared Goff, with the thumb. He looked like he was throwing a ball there at the warmups of last week's game. Who knows how really good that thumb is gonna be ready to go coming up on this wild card game. Defense has been there for Los Angeles the whole year, but Seattle's offense has just been really good, and Tyler Lockett seems to show up in big time moments. So I like the Seahawks at home. And also, you got to deal with the 12th man. Give me the Seahawks.
Well, there won't be any 12th man in the seats, but Seattle is not an easy to place to play at.
I'm still used to fancy.
I know we're not. Of course, and you think playoffs, you think these venues, no doubt. You know that would play a factor, but. Yeah, I mean, the Rams, the injury, that's just hard. And the Rams were playing really well. And again, I was very high on them, but I'm going to take Russell Wilson in this one with the team healthy and the defense over the last 6 weeks of the season playing a really high level, complementing the offense really well. We know that the Seahawks can beat you in a shootout, but if the offense gets stymied, can the defense step up and keep them in the game? That's going to be the question. I don't think that gets tested against the Rams, but depending on if they get through, that next matchup could prove that sort of challenge for them, you know, and that sort of inherent flaw on the Seattle team. But we're both picking Seattle at home.
And in addition, Cooper Kupp and Michael Brockers both played on the still the COVID-19 list this week. So,
yeah. Yeah. All right, Mitch, final game on Saturday. This is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 11-5, the top wildcard team in the NFC, taking on the Washington football team, 7-9 division winners. I do want to say this, so glad they got to 7 wins, because 6-10 as a division winner would have just been a very horrible thing to look at. At least 7-9 looks a little better. Mitch, I really want to take Washington in this. I'm going to take Tampa. Okay, quarterback, again, the same thing kind of with the Rams. The defense is really good for Washington. They could definitely win a 17-13, 20-14 type game if they needed to. The question is, could the offense score that much? And I just don't. I'm just not going to put money on that. I'm just not going to put money on the defense holding Tampa Bay to less than 20, 21 points and the offense scoring that many. I just can't do it.
Yeah. Right now, the line, Tampa Bay -8.5, over under at 45. I'm going to hammer the under.
Yeah, that's 8.5 is quite a bit, too. I don't know. That's interesting.
Sorry, Tampa Bay at -8.
-8. I wouldn't take
the line, but I'd take the under.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm not going to take the line here because I think it's going to be closer than 8. But I'm going to take the under 45 because I think it could be a 20-17, 23-17 game. I really want to take Washington, and there is a path for them to do this.
Oh, no doubt.
There is a path for them to do this. If that front four, if that defense finds a way to shut down the run game of the Buccaneers and force Tom Brady into uncomfortable situations because the front four is getting to him early and often, there is a clear path where Washington could win this game. I just can't do it. I just can't do it because I think the Bucs are just a far superior team to Washington.
Yeah, well, and the hard thing with the Bucs too is they have had some up and downs this year. They haven't always looked fantastic. They had a big win against the Packers, but they've also dropped some games, and Brady has looked really human in certain moments this season. So you wonder, what does it look like in the playoffs, right? If they could get pressure on him, which this Washington front surely can, right? How does that affect the rest of that game? How does it affect their ability to move the ball? I mean, you're absolutely right. There definitely is a path, but who could bet money on that, right? I mean, I'm not.
No, I'm not either.
No way. Sorry. I'll take Tampa Bay, I guess. But we're rooting for Washington, no doubt.
Yeah, it's just...
We all love an upset. Come on. We'd love to see that.
No, I am. It's just, it's hard to pick against Tom Brady.
No doubt.
We haven't seen him do it, but
we could root for it.
Sure.
You don't want to root for him?
No, I do.
You want to root for Riverboat Ron and Alex Smith?
No, I do.
The two best stories in the NFL?
I do. I absolutely do.
For Washington. We pick Tampa.
But I'm picking Tampa. Yeah
we picked the Bucks. Okay, Mitch, Sunday slate, early game, a rematch of last season's divisional round, Baltimore and Tennessee. This time, it's Baltimore on the road. At Tennessee, Baltimore ends up 11-5. They end up as the 5 seed, the top wildcard team. Tennessee wins the AFC South, hosts this game. But man, the revenge tour for Lamar Jackson, Mitch. Can he break the narrative? Can he get that first playoff win and do it against the team that bounced him in his MVP 14 win season last year? What do you think?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Of course he can. Let's go.
Give me the Ravens.
Yes, the Ravens. And here's the thing, Mitch. They are playing. It looked rough there for a second, but they had a very favorable last half of the season, which really not only allowed them to get healthy, but play with more momentum, play with some consistency. And you look at the teams, we talked about Buffalo rolling into the playoffs the way that they are. I mean, you look at the AFC, Baltimore is kind of rolling into the playoffs too. They're probably feeling pretty good.
Well, Baltimore's offense right now is hot. They're hot. And Tennessee, I mean, obviously they have a 2,000-yard rusher in Derrick Henry, who I think personally it should be in the MVP conversation. I don't think he should win it, but I think he should be in that conversation. You look at the spread and the over-unders here. Baltimore -3, the over-under 50, or at over-under at 55 right now.
Yeah, favored on the road. Pretty interesting.
I'm going to take Ravens on the road. I'm going to take the spread here.
Yeah, I would take it too.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would take the over-under here.
Which is how much?
55.
I'd take the over.
You think so?
Yeah, I see this somewhere a little 33-27, right? That's like 60. That's a little higher than 55. That's a pretty good line. That's a pretty fair over under.
That's a tough one to take. I'm gonna say I'm not even gonna bet on the over under here, and I'm gonna take the spread though at Ravens 3 at -3 because I feel like that's a fair spread. Because I feel like that this could be a three point game. But yeah, I gotta take the Ravens here. Red hot. Offense right now. I think Lamar Jackson gets his revenge from last year. I think that this Ravens defense, they may not shut down Derrick Henry, but they may shut down Ryan Tannehill in the pass offense. So give me the Ravens in this one.
Yeah, no doubt. And I believe in Lamar, and I think he's going to pull through this. And this, you know, I mean, this might be early, but if you're giving me Buffalo, Baltimore next week, I might take Baltimore. I might believe in some Lamar Jackson. So I'm feeling pretty good about Tennessee here. I think this is a great opportunity for them, and this should obviously should just be like a fantastic game. This should just be a great one. This will be a great one.
Yes, definitely.
All right, Mitch. We have the final NFC matchup here, your Chicago Bears squeaking in the playoffs, 7 seed, 8-8.
This isn't the final one.
The final NFC
team. Oh, final NFC.
Yeah. Taking on the New Orleans Saints in New Orleans, 12-4 for the Saints. Okay, Mitch, you're a Bears fan, and you do the thing every week where you say, you know, you gotta be crazy if I'm not taking my Bears. Is that where we're at?
Look, here's the spread. Here's the spread. Let me give you the spread and the over-unders here.
Okay.
So the spread right now is New Orleans -10. Over-under is 47.
Okay.
I'm going to take the over. I think that this is going to be more than just a 24-23 game. Okay. Which would equate to 47. So, I think it'll be more than that. The Saints right now are playing with a Drew Brees that is on his way out. He probably wants to get that last title. He has to get that last title. He wants to do the Peyton Manning thing and ride out into the sunset as a champion. I get that. I 100% get that. And it looks wrong, and it smells wrong, and it tastes wrong, but it feels so right. Bear Don, you gotta be crazy if you think I'm not taking my Bears against the Saints. Give me the Bears.
Mitch, I got to give you some credit here. I got to eat some crow because I mocked you in the beginning of the season for picking the Bears as a playoff team. I mocked you. Honestly, I was correct to mock you. And yet they still,
stroke the beard.
Sons of guns. Yes. Get into the playoffs at 8-8 and vindicate you. Now, when they lose by 24 points to the Saints, we can laugh next week. But congrats on correctly predicting the Bears to the playoffs.
Thank you.
Saints by 24.
Oh, that's not even fair. That's not fair.
37-13.
Okay. Hey, to each their own, but you know, yes. You got to be crazy if you think I'm going to take my Bears.
I respect it, Mitch. I really
do. You got to be crazy if you think I'm not taking them.
All right, final game here. AFC North matchup, a repeat of week 17. It was Browns-Steelers in week 17. It's Browns-Steelers again in week 18, a.k.a. the wild card. This one's going to look a little bit different. No Mason Rudolph under center. It's going to be Big Ben. The starters, T.J. Watt, guess what? He's playing. They're going to have their guys there. Can the Browns continue this magical run in 2020, breaking the playoff drought by getting there as a wild card team at 11-5? Can they upset the division rivals, the team that led the AFC North all year and stumbled to a 12-4 record at the end of the season? Can the Browns pull this off, Mitch?
Well, you know, so here's the thing is the Steelers, they started off 11-0, and we had a conversation about them being 11-0, and I think that's a mute point now because this is a completely different season. The season has turned over now to a completely different type of season. This is no longer win or loss. This is win or go home.
Yes.
The Steelers right now, to me, even with Big Ben, just still aren't up to the par that they were when they were going on that 11-0 run. Right now, the spread is at Pittsburgh at -6. It is over under 47.5. I think I'm going to take the over in this one because I love the Brownies. Give me the Brownies on the road in Pittsburgh. Shitting all over the Pittsburgh Steelers fan base. Taking the terrible towel and wiping their behinds with it.
Oh, wow.
Give me
the disrespect.
Give me the Cleveland Browns. Give me the Brownies on the road. I love this Browns team, and I think they're for real. Now, they had some COVID scares this week.
Kevin Stefanski, it seems like. But no head coach.
Not to mean that he could not be still part of the game scheming here because, hey, we got Zoom nowadays, right?
Oh, no doubt.
So there could be some conversations between whoever the play caller is going to be and Kevin Stefanski going into this game. But I believe in this Browns team. I believe in Baker Mayfield. I believe in that ground game of Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb. I believe in the prowess of Jarvis Landry. I believe in this, and Browns offense is going to take advantage of the Steelers defense, even with all their pieces back. Give me the Browns. I'm going to take the over, and I'm not going to take the spread here. I'm going to take the opposite of the spread. I'm going to take Browns +6 here. Give me the Brownies.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, listen, this is Believe Land, Mitch.
You got to do it.
I'm on board with the Browns winning this game. And this is okay. There are multiple reasons here. One, they're a team that's designed to kind of beat a team like the Steelers. Steelers offensively not that strong. Lucky for the Browns, their defense, you know, is probably okay too. So that's a favorable matchup. The defense is the real unit for Pittsburgh. And if you're the Browns and you can run the ball, which is what they've done so well this year, eat up clock, keep Big Ben off the field, run the ball down their throats, tire that team out so that at the end of the second half, you can move them around, kill that time, and get that win, and hope your defense can do enough against Ben Roethlisberger and that Pittsburgh Steelers offense, which at this point is so one-dimensional. it's so obvious what they're doing. You just have to keep everything in front of you and force them into third downs. And they're not going to convert all of those. So the scenario is right there for the Browns to win this. I do believe they will. I don't believe in the Pittsburgh Steelers. There's no way in hell I'm picking the Steelers after what they pulled off the final 5 weeks of the season. Going 1-4. 1-4. Come on. Yeah, the Browns, Mitch.
Get on that Brownies train. I'll tell you what. I'm a big Bears fan. I would love to see the Bears advance as far as possible. But I am a huge Bills fan, and I'm a huge Browns fan this offseason. This postseason. I want to see those two teams at it. I want to see those teams.
No doubt.
Because
no doubt.
I mean, these are the best stories in the NFL right now outside of Ron Rivera and Alex Smith. I mean, these teams are what we would hope they would be in the last couple of years, and finally it's coming to fruition, and finally we're going to see a good Browns team and a good Bills team in the playoffs again. It just seems like old school football, and I love it. I love every second of it. I love every minute moment of it. Browns, Bills, good football. I love seeing it. This is going to be a fantastic wildcard week.
It's the best time of year, Mitch. It really is.
It really is.
It really is. Like, we're going to have, and that's the thing. Like, even the worst game, the worst games, probably Chicago, New Orleans, which is at least interesting. Even Washington, Tampa Bay is somewhat compelling as you're like, is this 7-win team going to end up winning a playoff game?
It's can't miss football. It's can't miss
football. It really is. It really is so much fun, and we're going to be loving it all weekend, and we'll be right back here next week with a recap and then looking ahead to the divisional round matchups. Mitch, this has been so much fun, my friend.
This might be our best episode of all time.
I think it was pretty close, except for all the lies that I had to tell there for that one part.
No. These aren't lies, Dallin. This is part of your punishment. They're not lies. They're truths.
Well, it felt like a lie.
Well,
I'm living a lie.
Dallin, do not back out on your punishment. Don't back out on your punishment. I had to shave my head. I couldn't get a girlfriend for 8 months because I had a bald head. Guess what? You have to abide by these things. Those are truths, and you know it.
I don't have to believe them to say them, Mitch. You can't make me believe them.
Well, guess what? You better for the next 8 months. Because guess what? There's a lot more coming, bud. A lot more coming your way, pal.
I look forward to it, and you should as well. And if you don't already, subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen, but check us out on Anchor because it is the best place to find the Sports Hour. If you haven't gone on there already, all the episodes are on there. You can find ways to support us on the podcast. You can leave us voice messages, be a part of the show, just what we want. We look at this as a way to talk to all of you, to have this conversation together. So we invite you to do those things and be a part of that conversation. We'd very much appreciate it.
Yeah. And if you haven't followed us on our socials, make sure to get on there and follow us at Instagram at the Sports Hour Guys. Go ahead and follow us on Twitter at Sports Hour Guys. You can follow Dallin at Lil Foint. And make sure you get on Apple Podcasts and leave us a rating and review. Tell us we suck. That's the only way that we can get better. Is that right, D?
It is the only way. This is the way.
This is the way. We're going to end here and I'm going to watch Mandalorian. So
that sounds good.
I haven't watched the second season yet. So.
Oh my gosh, Mitch.
I know.
You can't tell me that as we're trying to wrap up the podcast. Okay.
We'll talk about that later. We'll watch it and we'll review a little bit.
We're gonna start a new TV review podcast.
Well, you know, maybe next week once I watch Mandalorian, we'll do about 3 minutes on just covering the Mandalorian because
I'm gonna need more than 3 minutes. I can already tell you that.
Well, I know you're a Star Wars nerd, so
it's been a pleasure, guys. We will catch you next week.
See ya.